This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
On second and goal, here's the snap. It's dropped to Sean. Trying to fall for
it. Oh, no.
It's a fumble, and the Colts have it at the 10. The Texans botched the snap. They turn it over, and Indianapolis is going to win the game.
Man, it hurts. I'm tired of losing. Being so close over the years is just, it's tough.
That's Deshaun Watson. That was the play that sealed the game for the Indianapolis Colts yesterday as we welcome you in on a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. Sean Pendergast alongside Seth Payne, and this has been a season that's been largely a lost season, certainly a lost season now at 4-8. The best the Texans can do is a .500 record on the season. If they win out, 9-7 probably wasn't even going to get it done in this year's AFC. But yesterday's game, Seth, it would have been a game where in this season that was 4-7 going into yesterday, it would have been not only a nice win to keep the momentum going and keep the positive feeling going, but it would have been against a really good football team in the Indianapolis Colts and done in a way where Deshaun Watson doing some heroic things with seriously depleted weapons around him. It was a gut punch game. I think Mark Vandermeer put it best in their early portion of the postgame show. It was a huge, heartbreaking gut punch for the Texans yesterday.
It really was, and especially in a year where, Sean, they entered the game with a 0.9% chance of making the playoffs, and you and I, as the show of optimism in Houston, were very engrossed in that. I hate to tell you, Sean, but I think it's probably going to be below 0.9%.
Have you checked yet
this week? I haven't. I mean, I know the basics of it, Sean. Yeah. I know that to make the playoffs, you have to win a whole bunch of games,
yeah.
and they're not there yet.
Part of being optimistic is burying your head in the sand when the pessimism really starts to creep
right.
in.
That's right.
I'm not going to go look.
For all intents and purposes, a lost season. There's been a lot of stuff these last few weeks to get excited about as you start to think towards the future. I don't think any differently about that, but so much about this game in so many people's minds. And the evidence for this is the fact that Bill O'Brien was trending on Twitter after the game, several months after he was fired. You see so many things on this roster right now where you say, why, O'Brien? Why? Why is Kiki QT? Why was he in your doghouse for so long? Why did you enter this season as the only team in the league that had four wide receivers making more than $6 million a year, and yet Deshaun is just as productive versus one of the best defenses you've played using Kiki QT and Chad Hansen as your main wide receivers? All of these things. But then, most egregiously, why is the fourth highest paid center in football somebody who is clearly not the fourth best center in football? And why is Nick Martin getting so thoroughly and completely trounced, so just incredibly worked over by DeForest Buckner? Every time I turned around, Nick Martin was just getting pounded by DeForest Buckner. This is the fourth highest paid center in football. You extended this guy before you even had to. Because he was dependable, tough, and smart, because he says all the right things, because he steals weight room from the, because he steals equipment from the weight room. He's a yes sir, no sir guy. But Kiki QT, meanwhile, is in the doghouse. And it was like decision after decision after decision of that, where Bill O'Brien just could not be trusted with the checkbook and made all these decisions. And it just, you get so retroactively angry at Bill O'Brien that this is what Deshaun Watson has been surrounded by, because the offensive line, man, I'll tell you what, I got a bone to pick with McClain, because I saw in his grades after the game that he gave the offensive line a C. That is bogus. That offensive line is pathetic. But I'll use John's word. In the run game, in pass protection, half of Deshaun's really good throws yesterday were made as Deshaun was sprinting towards the line of scrimmage trying to escape the pocket. A skill which, by the way, I think Deshaun might be the best in the league at. Yeah. His ability to like be running full speed towards the line of scrimmage and throw downfield,
yeah,
very impressive. But unfortunately, he has to use it too often. The run game was largely set up by the pass game yesterday. Yes, they averaged 4-some yards per carry, but they only rushed a total with their running backs, I think 13 times with their running backs. The offensive line is just a mess. That offensive line, honestly, they should remove the mirrors from their homes, because they shouldn't be allowed to look themselves in the face. Like, it should be, if this were back in the days of paper paychecks, Sean, they would have to back themselves up to the pay window,
yeah,
with masks over their faces.
Yeah.
Just please, sir, can I have my money? I know I don't deserve this. And I'm going to tell you another thing. I'm tired of Laremy Tunsil going all NBA player every time he commits a penalty and acting like he can't understand for the life of him how he committed the penalty that he clearly committed. I'm tired of that. This offensive line, they've been getting, Sean, this is what we've been doing. This offensive line has been getting attaboys for being somewhat adequate in pass protection. And like, it's been disgusting me that I've heard all these people say, well, hey, the offensive line's made some progress. Have they? They're the worst rushing offense in football. Like, that still matters somewhat in today's NFL. And then yesterday, the only reason that Deshaun didn't get sacked more than 5 times was because Deshaun made some incredible plays. And that was another thing that bothered me about McClain giving them a C. He said, well, all of the sacks weren't the offensive line's fault. At least 4 of them were, big time. Like, 100% the offensive line's fault. These guys, honestly, I'd cut all of them. I'd cut all of them today if I didn't have the sense to know how it hurt the salary cap.
Yeah, well, look,
get it out of my system.
Yeah, no, your takes are all obviously extremely valid on the offensive line. I guess, you know, Seth, my big takeaway, and we're going to dig into parts of this game, the game itself, you know, Romeo Crennel's decision making at the end of the first half, we'll get into that in the next segment. You know, to me, once the season gets to 4-7 and 4-8, it's less about, well, should they have done this on third down? Well, the play calling this or the play calling that. Especially in a season where you had higher expectations than 4-8, 12 games in, it's about the emotion of the situation. And that's why Bill O'Brien was trending yesterday. People are angry because that game yesterday, appropriately the game that essentially sealed the deal on the Texans season and mathematically eliminated them from doing anything beyond the 16 games that the league allows them during the regular season, that all of Bill O'Brien's decisions were on full display yesterday. Nick Martin, $11 million, snapping the ball at Deshaun's shin. David Johnson, 10 carries for 44 yards. And this pass-catching phenom that he was going to be out of the backfield, no catches. 2 targets, no catches. Whitney Mercilus, I think I need to update people. Whitney Mercilus did play yesterday. You wouldn't know if you looked at the box score on ESPN because he had no stats. Literally zeros across the board. He makes $13 million a year. Kiki QT was in the doghouse for 10 weeks. He fumbled against Baltimore and hadn't touched the ball until a week or two ago. He had 8 catches for 141 yards yesterday. Randall Cobb makes $9 million a year because Bill O'Brien didn't trust Kiki QT.
Yeah.
Seth, it sucks to have to look backwards because in this season where they are going to wind up with a new GM and a new head coach, and we hope these are going to be great hires, they can't be worse than the guy that they had. But you can't help but watch yesterday's game and emotionally look at it and go, this guy committed malpractice. This guy made decisions that were so selfish, trading DeAndre Hopkins and Jadeveon Clowney because he didn't like their vibe. And I don't want to hear about the contract with DeAndre Hopkins. Bill O'Brien went this offseason to surround himself with guys he felt like going to work with every day.
Yes.
And that loved the ethos of getting up at 5 in the morning as much as he did. That's
Sean.
It.
Sean, that's exactly right. Before you ever go down that road of saying, well, look, it makes sense DeAndre Hopkins is going to make too much money. Fine, I'll see you that part of the argument, but you don't turn around and overpay multiple mediocre football players.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we're going to do this because of fiscal conservatism and we're going to be judicious about this. But then we're going to overpay a bunch of guys. You know, I was talking to Brandon Scott, our web guy, last night. He joined us on KHOU. Mm-hmm. And he said something really good off air that I wish – I don't know why I didn't say it on air. I'm going to take him to task for that. He said it seemed like Bill O'Brien wanted to surround himself with guys that he didn't actually have to coach. Like, oh, I want a bunch of mature guys that'll do what they're supposed to do, and they're good guys, and they show up and everything, versus actually turn some of these young guys into something more than what they are. And, yeah, that's what he paid a bunch of old guys that don't do anything on the football field. It's like walking in and spreading my 401k around to a bunch of strangers in a nursing home. But at least I could feel good about that, you know? I'm not making them rich and I'm helping them buy, you know, Christmas presents for their grandkids.
Right, right. And then they take the rest and they put it in a savings account that's making 0.86% over the course of a year.
Probably contribute to politicians I don't like. Or
All right,
I walked into the wrong nursing home.
Right, right, right. All right, so we're off and running on a Monday. It was a tough day yesterday if you're a Texan fan. And it was a tough day for Romeo Crennel. I think we had our first real honeymoon is over moment with Romeo Crennel yesterday, undoubtedly. We will. That laugh means we did. We'll have it for you next.
Here's a 34-yard attempt. Left hash mark for Fairbairn. Snap is down. The kick is up, and it's good.
All right, that may seem like a pretty benign highlight right there, but that highlight was the end result of some strange decision-making by Romeo Crennel at the end of the first half. And look, these games are what they are at this point. The Texans are 4-8. They lose yesterday to the Indianapolis Colts. Heartbreaking fashion, 26-20. But the end of the first half, this was the first time since Romeo Crennel took over the team, Seth, where I felt like, okay, he is now making decisions that are negligently reducing his team's chances of winning. He's made crucial decisions before that haven't worked. But I've agreed with the decisions. Like when he went for two against Tennessee to try to go up by two possessions with under 2 minutes to go in the game, thought it was the right decision. Didn't work. They wound up losing the game in overtime, but it was the right decision. Going forward on fourth and goal against Cleveland early in the game on fourth and goal from the two, I like that decision. The play call stunk. They called a quarterback draw that Cleveland was waiting for. This was the first time, and it was a sequence of things, unfortunately, that potentially left 4 points on the field in a game where a total of 2 points were scored by both teams in the second half of the game, and I was on a safety. So the sequence was this. The Indianapolis Colts were lining up to kick a field goal that would have, and did, put them up 24-17 with about a minute and a half to go in the half. Romeo Crennel, with two timeouts left, uses a timeout to ice a kicker who's kicking a field goal with a minute and a half left in the second quarter.
You're going to have Deshaun Watson's going to get the ball back. And for one, nobody knows for sure whether icing the kicker actually has any effect at all. And if it does, it's extremely minimal. So it's like all the credit to anybody, any of the analytics type people wanted to give Romeo Crennel for some of the more aggressive moves he's made this season. Just know this. Apparently, he's just been basing it on nothing at all. He's just been flying by the seat of his pants because this didn't make any sense. This didn't make any sense by conventional logic. This didn't make any sense by analytical logic. It didn't make any sense at all, Sean. And then ultimately, at the end of that half, it would have been nice. It would have been nice to have an extra timeout in your pocket on those last set of downs, to where maybe the defense for the Colts would have had to think about a run play, but they didn't.
Well, or to where you left yourself enough time to where you felt comfortable, you know, using all four of your downs when you're in a goal-to-go situation. He kicked a field goal on third down with eight seconds still to go in the half. You had just run two plays that each took 3 seconds throwing the ball into the end zone.
You're exactly right. Why? So you didn't need the timeout anyway to throw one more pass
one
play.
One more play into the end zone, and you've got Deshaun Watson.
But hypothetically, let's say you did. you would have, if you had the timeout, you could have either used it earlier. Yeah. You would have been, oh my gosh.
Let's hear Romeo Crennel's, I might get more of your thoughts, Seth, but let's hear Romeo Crennel's explanation for his sequence of decision making.
Well, the clock, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of time, and so if you don't kick it there and something goes wrong on a play, then you don't have the opportunity to get the points on the board, all right? So we kicked it to get the points on the board. And then at the end of the half, I made a decision to try to ice the kicker, probably wasn't the best decision to make, but I called the timeout on that one. And probably if we had had that timeout, we might have been able to use it to maybe to get a touchdown at the end of the half.
Yes, that's true, Romeo. You might have been able to. Seth, let me ask you this.
He went kind of Brock Osweiler around us there.
He did. In football, in the National Football League, it's good to have timeouts at the end of the half.
He did it. He did that at another point during the press conference yesterday when he kind of started to explain the basics of scoring points in football.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Do you think Rodrigo Blankenship even knew that he was being iced at that moment, the kicker for the Colts? Do you even think that
he's got too much of a Joe Kelly vibe for me to think clearly or rationally?
He does with
about
the glasses. I'm just
those,
like,
I want to kick him in the head and break his glasses like an old school bully.
It could be any kicker though. Like they're, you know, if I'm a kicker, I'm going, okay, I don't even know why they're calling timeout. Do they have 12 men on the field?
Yeah,
and
no,
then, you know,
no.
Like, and then like, no, they're icing you. Really? They're icing me now?
Oh no.
Yeah.
That might be one of those
Yikes.
Things that works. It might work because it's so dumb that it actually gets in the kicker's brain, and like he's actually thinking, like, seriously, why would he ice me? I'm kind of insulted. He thought I could be iced, and then
right.
boom, he's
yeah,
iced. Yeah,
yeah, that was a bad day.
You know,
for
Sean,
Romeo.
That's the whole thing. I think the old logic behind icing the kicker too was probably, hey, you know, it's a high pressure situation. You make him soak in that pressure a little bit longer. There's no pressure there. It's the end
no,
of the first half.
No, no. By Romeo Crennel's definition of when to ice the kicker, he basically thinks that kickers are peeing down their leg every field goal. Every kick of the entire game, they are pooping their pants and don't even want to walk out onto the field. Second quarter with a minute and a half to go, he's using a timeout when you're going to get the ball back with one of the best quarterbacks in football to ice the kicker. Are you kidding me?
The roof is open. I didn't expect the roof to be open. I'm already freaked out as
yeah,
it is.
God can see me.
God can see all my sins. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. And now we got Romeo Crennel calling a timeout. Oh, me, oh, my.
Oh, God. Here's Romeo. Romeo was asked later. I think Brandon Scott asked him this question. Brandon Scott, who is our Texans insider on sportsradio610.com, he asked Romeo if he thought that icing the kicker was something that worked.
Sometimes. I mean, hey, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. If he had missed the field goal, then boom, I would have been a genius. But he made it, so I'm a doofus.
I love that. Okay. I can't be too mad at him.
No, I'm not mad at Romeo Crennel. I'm really, personally, I'm not mad at him because I know he's not going to be the head coach going forward.
Like, well, and that's one of those silver linings of any of these things that happen in the game. Now, silver lining when Romeo does that, because you think, all right, well, he's not our coach moving forward. When Nick Martin botches the snap and then whiffs on his blocking assignment, because that's what really lost the game. If Nick Martin hadn't whiffed on the blocking assignment, then Deshaun probably has time to recover the ball himself. But Nick Martin's guy blew up the play as Deshaun was trying to. Nick Martin's going to be here. You know, that's the it's fine if you were here. I just don't like him being the fourth highest paid center in football.
No, well,
when he's not nearly even close to being that good.
Text message, Seth. Do not give up on the offensive line until they get new coach and new scheme.
Yes,
and I know.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. In the open of the show, you were just kind of venting, you know, letting off some steam about the offensive line and how bad they were yesterday and how bad they've been all year long and how ridiculous McLean's grade of a C yesterday was for them, way too high of a grade for them yesterday. But I think that echoes some of the things you and I have been saying, which is, look, they're pot committed to this offensive line, most of these guys. Zach Fulton, yeah, not so much. But they're pot committed to Laremy Tunsil, Max Sharping, Titus Howard, Nick Martin. Like, they've either paid these guys a lot of money or invested very high draft capital in all of them.
Well, and Titus Howard is going to continue to get better. Max Sharping had some really, really bad snaps in the game. But a lot of their issues are also just their cohesion, how well they work side by side, their communication and timing, all of that. That can be improved with coaching and scheme. So, yeah. I'm not long-term extremely pessimistic about it. It's just in the short term, it's annoying me. It's annoying me that people keep praising this offensive line for not sucking as bad as
right,
they used to.
Right.
They're
Congrats.
Still not a good offensive line at all.
Yeah. No, yeah. You're 16th in pass blocking. Congratulations. You know, that'll get us where we need to go.
And half of that is Deshaun. Yeah. Deshaun putting lipstick on a pig.
Oh, I said that to Clint yesterday as we're watching that thing, Seth. I said, can you imagine if the Texans, can you imagine if Philip Rivers was the Texans quarterback? Like, imagine if it was a, imagine if the Texans had a quarterback who had zero escapability. They would give up 13 sacks a game. Like, they would get somebody killed. Oh, all right. Yesterday, a referendum on Bill O'Brien's malpractice. It's next. All right, I think we should point out, and we'll get to this in more detail at the top of the hour, we can't ignore the fact that going into this game, at least my opinion was, win or lose in this game, I think the thing we want to walk away from this game with is the feeling like, okay, Deshaun has taken that next step to where now there's none of this delta with no Will Fuller, yes Will Fuller. You know, where he had his stats are through the roof with Will Fuller out there, and they're, even with DeAndre Hopkins, they were significantly worse without Will Fuller out there. That was a really good defense they went against yesterday, and Deshaun made 100-yard receivers out of two guys, one of whom had been in the doghouse for 10 weeks, and the other one had 9 catches his entire career, and they happened 3 years ago in Chad Hansen. Two 100-yard receivers. It's one game, but Seth, it's, and we'll dig into this more top of the hour, but just real quick, like we did, in the spirit of trying to stay balanced and at least mixing in some of the positive that happened yesterday, because we're about to get into some really negative stuff here with looking at some of the moves that Bill O'Brien made and how they impacted the team yesterday and how the next GM and head coach need to avoid these mistakes, is that I did come away yesterday going, okay, as if I needed any more validation, like Deshaun's the man. Deshaun right. is the unequivocal man.
Well, I think that the biggest thing that's happened as the season has developed, regardless of offensive output or even what his passing numbers are in any particular game, he has developed a composure in and out of the pocket, and I think a judgment that he didn't have before. I think when he's choosing to run, when he's choosing to scramble, when he's choosing to flee the pocket, all of those things have improved a lot.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is, even though I've been bashing the offensive line for a half hour, part of it is that the offensive line is not as bad in pass protection as they used to be. So he's starting to have a trust that, okay, just because one guy got through, it doesn't mean the whole pocket is collapsing. So he sidesteps, he takes a couple steps, then he throws. But the other thing, too, and you really saw this yesterday, lo and behold, when Kiki QT was out there, that there are times where he is getting rid of the ball lightning fast against pressure. His first resort versus pressure now is to not either run or find DeAndre Hopkins. At times now, he is just rifling it out really fast with people barreling down on him in a way and with a rhythm that we didn't really see before. So, yeah, there was a lot to be happy about with Deshaun yesterday versus, like you said, a very good defense. I know the Colts got worked over last week, but they were missing two defensive linemen, which is kind of a big deal for that team. They got Danico Autry and DeForest Buckner back yesterday, as we noticed. And Justin Houston is still alive and well. And so Deshaun was doing all this versus a very good defense. It was impressive.
Yep, no doubt about it. All right, so, and I would say, you know, Seth, and we'll talk more about J.J. Watt in the next hour as well, but I would expand J.J. into that as well. Like, the two stars of this team are what kept this team in it yesterday. The two stars of this team, Deshaun Watson on offense and J.J. Watt, who has been outstanding the last 3 weeks. 4 pass breakups against New England 2 weeks ago, the pick 6 against the Lions on Thanksgiving Day, and then yesterday he was all over the place. J.J. Watt in the second half was single-handedly putting the Colts in down and distance situations that set them up for the half that they had offensively, where they didn't score any points offensively in the second half. The only 2 points that either team scored was a safety that the Colts got.
He had 4 tackles for a loss, plus the one play where he disrupted that end around.
Yeah.
And Justin Reed ended up making the tackle on 3rd and 1. Unfortunately, they gave up a score on the next down.
Right.
But it was, he was these last three weeks, we've seen a whole lot of glimpses of vintage J.J. Watt. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah, that's why the visual of Deshaun, I will never forget the visual yesterday. It'll be emblazoned in my brain of Deshaun with the towel over his head after the game on the bench, clearly either sobbing or near tears. And then the look on J.J.'s face when the fumble happened, when Nick Martin's, I hesitate to call it a fumble because that would imply that it was Deshaun's fault. Now, Deshaun will say, I should have caught that snap. And he did say that after the game. He's not going to throw his center under the bus. It's a bad snap. It was a bad snap by Nick Martin. The look on JJ's face, the camera panning over to him, and he's had this like this smirk on his face, like, okay, like, I don't know what the football gods have against us this year, but here's a new and exciting way to lose a football game. I'll never forget that from yesterday. That'll be the image emblazoned in my brain because, and this is where we get into it. Ben, give us some mood music for this segment, if you could. This is where the frustration of yesterday, two star players, Bill O'Brien did not bring in either of these guys. Rick Smith traded for Deshaun Watson. Rick Smith drafted J.J. Watt at the behest of Wade Phillips. He didn't bring either of these guys in. These guys were out there covering up all the mistakes of O'Brien's DTS brigade that he's brought in over the last couple years. Not only brought in, but proceeded to hand the equivalent of the gross national product of several small third world countries to in contracts that are crippling this team's salary cap. So let's go through these real quick. And I go through these not to wallow in negativity, but with hopes that the next head coach or general manager is listening to Payne and Pendergast and taking notes and saying to himself, I'm not going to do these things, such as giving Whitney Mercilus 4 years, $54 million. For those who don't know, Whitney Mercilus did play yesterday. He was on the field. I can't wait to see what his snap count was. The higher his snap count was, the more angry I'm going to be looking at it because he was literally a zero yesterday. If you look at the stat sheet, he does not show up. He is a ghost. He's a phantom. And he has been all year long. Zero impact. He's not good. He looks out of shape. He looks disinterested. He's the dude who is shuffling papers around his cubicle to look busy. Why does he look like he enjoys getting blocked, Seth? Whitney Mercilus looks like he runs straight at defenders and then just doesn't want to leave them. He likes being blocked.
I don't want to rain on your anger parade on this disgust parade in this segment.
Be honest.
I don't want to make you feel bad about yourself. This is what I'd say, Sean. We've known Whitney Mercilus for about a decade now.
Yeah.
I think there's got to be something more to this. I think it's got to be that he's playing through some kind of an injury.
Okay.
Because it'd be one thing if he weren't producing, but you're right. A lot of it does look almost like a lack of urgency or what have you. And that's not Whitney Mercilus. You know, I think even when he hasn't produced before or even when he hasn't played poorly, he's gone about his business a certain way. So what I'm thinking or what I'm hoping or at least what I'm keeping in the back of my mind is he might be working through something, which does not excuse Bill O'Brien for giving a 30-year-old guy the contract that he did, which was an overpay. It doesn't – like, I don't have any personal anger towards Whitney Mercilus because I just got to think he's going to be working through something. But it was not a contract that Bill O'Brien should have doled out.
No, I and let me be clear. I don't have any personal anger towards Whitney. My anger is at the contract. It's not at Whitney personally. Like, honestly, if Whitney were making half of what he was making and he's out there doing what he's doing this year, then whatever. If he's making $6, $7 million a year and he's a guy you feel comfortable with and he's going to be setting the edge even though he hasn't done that well this year, am I out of line by saying what I said right there?
No, No. I mean, it's been a huge underperformance.
Yeah.
But I do think like there have been times where, just like a lot of guys on the defense this year, there's times where they mess up because it looks like they're trying too hard. Yeah. Whitney yesterday had one play where it was Jonathan Martin or Himes with a run around to the defense's left. Whitney basically caved the tight end down so far that he couldn't get off the block. Same way it happened to JJ a couple weeks back versus Cleveland, which is a mistake, but it's almost a mistake of trying too hard.
Yeah.
It, like going too turbo because you're trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
So I think he's trying. It just doesn't look like it because he's not getting anything done.
Fair enough. The contract's bad, no doubt about that. Speaking of bad contracts, David Johnson, who Bill O'Brien traded DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson and the pick that became Ross Blacklock, telling us that David Johnson is an excellent three-down back. 10 carries, 44 yards, no catches. Here's David Johnson yesterday on his return. This is his first game back from being on injured reserve with concussion issues. David Johnson on his performance yesterday.
Man, I felt great. I was excited. It's been a long time. It felt like forever that I was on IR and not being with the team and just spectating. And it felt good, and especially since I was able to get that touchdown. It felt good just being back with the boys, being back with the team, and playing the game that I love.
Yeah, again, nice guy who, if he were making $4 million a year instead of $11 million a year, cool. Get your 10 carries and your 44 yards. You go, David Johnson. Unfortunately for David Johnson, not so much for his heirs, but for him in the moment on December 7th, 2020, he is making $11 million a year. And unfortunately, he was traded in a deal in which the best player on the team last year was sent packing by Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, and that's where, when you look at this whole rushing attack in general, which yesterday, even though it averaged over 4 yards a carry, that was all set up by the pass, right? Like, Deshaun passing is what set up that run game. And thank you, Tim Kelly, credit for a designed quarterback run early in the game.
Yeah.
Look, it pays dividends.
For a touchdown, by God.
I promise you this would happen.
Yeah.
So, think about, real quick, I'm just going to do this off the top of my head. The capital and assets they have devoted towards the offensive line and running backs to try to at least for getting partly a passing game, but also a rushing game as well.
Yeah.
They're last or second to last in rushing in the NFL. Let's start at left tackle, go to the right. Two first-round picks, a second-round pick, another first-round pick. So you got three first-round picks on the offensive line and two second-round picks on the on the offensive line. You got two running backs who are amongst the highest-paid running backs in football, and you paid a DeAndre Hopkins. So you did all of that to be the worst rushing offense in football. That right there, it's not the DeAndre Hopkins trade by itself. It's all of this other stuff that is the true example of why Bill O'Brien was such a horrendous general manager.
Clint said on the postgame show yesterday that the Texans' rushing attack this year is the worst that he's ever seen of any football team at any level.
It's Sean, honestly,
I said I said worse than Vanderbilt, worse than your Arkansas teams. Yes, he said Arkansas had a 1,000-yard rusher when they won two games a couple years ago.
Sean, trying to define what's wrong with this rushing game is like trying to point out the abs on Jabba the Hutt. It's like there's just so much going on, and everything is so mushy and awful that you can't even pin it down. It's just a potpourri of misery when you start to dive into it. Yeah.
All right, so David Johnson, not good. Nick Martin, another investment that Bill O'Brien made in DTS, dependable, tough, smart. Nice snap. Here is the let's relive the magic of what happened towards the end of the game. Here's Deshaun Watson on the fumbled snap down the stretch.
This is a zone replay. We're going back and forth on if we were going to pass it or not. We didn't want to leave too much time for the Colts offense. So we're trying to at least run it. If we run it in, then we run it in. But if not, the clock is going to continue to run. And the back was on my right. I should have just caught the ball. I know it was, a little low and hot, but for me, I take big pride in just catching every snap, regardless of where it is and how fast it is. And that was just it. Just trying to hand it off to David. I think that was David that was in. I was going to read the end, but they were all gunning for me, so it would have been probably a positive play, hopefully. And
Deshaun not going to throw his center under the bus. It was a bad snap. It was a bad snap, and then Nick Martin whiffed on the block after the snap.
I had one guy at Twitter tell me, because this is where all the hardos are, all football purists say, well, it's just like a receiver. If it hits him in the hands, then it's on him to catch it. My answer to that is, what the hell are you talking about? No, that's not how it is with receivers. It's not. Who on earth has ever said, like with a straight face, if you can touch it, you can catch it? That's not true. That's not true at all. Now, like, could Deshaun Watson have conceivably caught that? Yes, but he shouldn't be in that position. And I'll say what's more, and this is where Nick Martin is doubly screwed for this. It was a bad snap, and then he whiffed completely on Grover Stewart, the nose tackle. And Stewart is the one that then knocked the ball away or knocked Deshaun off from being able to recover the fumble.
Right.
I mean, the criticism I would have given to Deshaun, I suppose, would be that, hey, if he had kept his eyes down towards it, I don't think he still would have caught the snap, but at least he could have kept track of it as he was trying to recover it. But I think peripherally he saw Grover Stewart barreling down on him because Nick Martin had whiffed.
Yeah.
So, like, No. It's not Deshaun's fault. This is all Nick Martin's fault.
Let me say this, too, to the people that if it hits your hands, you need to catch it. I mean, I can't believe I have to point this out. But when you're a receiver, that is all you have to do is catch it. You can then go to the ground or walk out of bounds or whatever.
Yeah.
When you're the quarterback, you then need to catch it. and then make a quick decision, read the defensive end, hand the ball off. Like, there's five other things you have to do with 11 large human beings looking for your skull. When you're a receiver, that's all you got to do is catch it, and then that's it, and then the play is over. So that's a ridiculous take by whoever said that.
Well, and especially, I'm actually angry about the receiver part of it, too. Like, No, it's not. If it touches the tip of your middle finger, you're not catching it. Also, by the way, I'll credit Battle Red Blog for this, who correctly pointed out that, right or wrong, yesterday shall forever be known as the Nick Martin game. 20 years from now, you're going to be able to, Sean, you and I will be sitting in a bar, and I'll be like, yeah, remember back in 2004, the Nick Martin game? And you're like, no. I remember the Nick Martin game, but it was actually 2020. I'm like, you're full of crap, Sean, and I punch you in the face. You can get away with it when you're old.
We can, and then we're going to walk outside and shake fists at clouds, because that's what old people do. So just rapid firing a few more of these, the DTS brigade and their impact on the game yesterday. Kyme Fairbairn, one of the highest paid kickers in football, he missed a field goal. Eric Murray, one of the most overpaid safeties in football, he makes $6 million a year. He had a great CFL until you looked at the other angle of it and he got called for a 15-yard penalty because he ripped the guy down by his head.
I will say, though, Eric Murray made another couple nice tackles in the game. The defensive backs deserve a lot of credit for really tightening up their tackling in the last few weeks.
Yes.
They come up in the flat and make a lot of plays. It's that part of it, at least, has been good.
Here's the most infuriating example, or one of the most infuriating examples, of the O'Brien DTS brigade. He spent $9 million a year on Randall Cobb. Again, another player who, if he was making $5 million a year, I would be like, this is really cool. They've got Randall Cobb on the team. But he's making $9 million a year in a situation where they at least ostensibly looked like they were bidding against themselves. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. Randall Cobb goes out with a toe injury a couple of weeks ago. In comes Kiki Kuti, who's done some good things in the past, but who's been in O'Brien's doghouse, and I guess theoretically in Romeo Crennel's doghouse, because it's not like he was getting on the field with Rack either. But now, out of necessity, he's on the field. And yesterday, he's the leading receiver for the team. 8 catches, buck 41 points. It's incredible when your coach shows a little confidence in you and you're able to be given an opportunity and you're talented, what it is you can go do. Here is Kiki Kuti on why it's been a struggle for him to get back on the field.
I feel like there's a lot of factors, you know, that go into it, you know, but me, I just have to do my job, show up to work hard every day, and on Sundays, you know, just continue to make plays. So, you know, that stuff, that's other stuff handled there, so I'm just here to do my job.
But I feel like Bill O'Brien hated young players, and if young players made a mistake, it counted fivefold against them than it did against the player that he saw as veteran or DTS, and because of that, there was no trust in Kiki QT, and the solution was to go overspend on Randall Cobb, who is guaranteed over $8 million next year. Just Kiki QT was, by proxy, frustrating me about Randall Cobb yesterday.
Sean, Bill O'Brien's year is, or however much as general manager, is going to be hopefully hilarious to look at 5 years from now. Hopefully they find somebody that gets all this straightened out. But I don't know if I've ever seen anybody spend so much on so little. You know, it's one thing to swing for the fences and maybe a higher, you know, you pay for a free agent who just had their career year or something, you bought high, but he overpaid time and time and time again, either on re-signing his own or bringing in free agents that nobody else probably even really wanted, and overpaid all of them.
Yeah.
And then tried to justify, and that's again why the whole trading away of DeAndre Hopkins, on some levels, the philosophy makes sense. But only if you don't turn around and overpay 10 times as many people as you just let walk out of the door for financial reasons.
100%.
Just incredible.
100%. All right, as we head into the 7 o'clock hour, it is a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. We're popping this morning. We're off and running, baby. So let's talk about the most important question going into yesterday's game. We talked a lot about the downside of yesterday. There is developments from yesterday, and one in particular Texans fans should be thrilled with, and we will talk about it next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right. Buckeye football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.